time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, this is Lee Bockham, and you're with us on the Thriveology Podcast. I am a full-time thriveologist, but a part-time thriver. And what that basically means is that as much as I want to thrive, there are plenty of places where I continue to struggle, where I continue to work to learn on how to thrive. And that's the reason for the podcast. It's so we can have a conversation about how to thrive better in the world, how to make a contribution in the world, how to learn from the obstacles in our way, how to basically take where we are and live with the struggles, not just live with them, but thrive because of those struggles. And so you might have noticed that we've been missing for a couple of weeks. Last couple of weeks, my wife has been in the hospital, which has given me an ample opportunity to work on how my thinking is, how my attitude is, and my thought process about that as she was struggling through her illness. Fortunately, she's at home now and feeling better, but during that time, that was my reason for not being able to podcast. I was basically at the hospital and not a lot of time there or space to record. So we're back. We're back in the swing, and we're going to get back to a series about how to impact the world. But it occurred to me that as we're getting to that, there's some conversation we might want to have about how you look at those life circumstances, like the fact that my wife got sick. You know, that's one of those things that just comes at you. I remember struggling with this a number of years back when I was sick, when I was very sick for a good half a year. And at the beginning of that sickness, I had lots of doctors saying that I wouldn't recover from it, that it would become a chronic illness that would eventually kill me. Now, obviously, that's not what happened as I sit here and I'm pretty healthy, probably healthier than I've been in my life. But that was the starting point. In fact, that starting point for me is one of those ideas of where I realized that an obstacle, something, a struggle, a difficulty can give you a way of growing, of learning. When I realized how sick I was, I also realized how poorly I had taken care of myself. And it gave me an opportunity to change that, to correct it, because I got lucky. I began to recover. And so that gave me a place to think about it. Now, in this past couple of weeks, I've watched my wife really be in a lot of physical pain and really be in the midst of watching what happens in the medical establishment. And as you're probably very aware, as I am, not all good comes from the medical establishment. I was often amazed about how little I knew about what was going on with her, but how much better I had an idea, for instance, of the dietary requirements when they were feeding her what I think was just the opposite of what might have been helpful. And so, you know, one of these places where I realized that sometimes we have to say, where are we going with this? How do we take this? How do we move forward? I long ago realized that life circumstances are not something we have a choice about. This really came home to me when I was a chaplain in the hospital and saw so many things happen, so many horrible things happen that were beyond the choices that anybody had made. Basically, it's that bumper sticker that, you know, bad things happen, as I say it in the nice way, but just bad things can come on us. And you know, as I've had opportunities, a couple of opportunities to be around the world, one of the things I'm aware of is when I think I'm having something bad, it's a really good day for somebody else, that we always have a worse place to be. Now, that doesn't take away the difficult times. It does create a perspective, though. You know, sometimes stuff just happens. It just comes our way, and there's nothing we can do about it. The problem is that we complicate it with the stuff that we think about when that stuff happens. In other words, usually the problem is not the problem. It's how we think about the problem that's really the problem. We deepen the situation. We deepen the difficulties because of how we respond, or we go the other way in a thriving way, and we learn from those experiences, and we struggle through them, but we find something on the other side. The complication is really in the thinking about the problem. Now, that doesn't take away the pain. It doesn't take away the grief, but it gives us a way of minimizing how painful something's going to be, how much grief is going to be associated, how much we're going to struggle against something if we can recognize that the problem is just what's happened. The real problem is how we begin to think about it. In the midst of some difficulty, we often get to that place where we're looking for the whys things happen. You know, we're looking for that deeper reason that this must mean something. It must mean we're on the wrong course, or somebody's out to get us, or God doesn't love us, or some other piece. And then we begin to reflect on what does this mean about ourselves? You know, I've met people who have gone from the heights of prosperity to the depths of being broke, of being indebted and having to declare bankruptcy. And the question is, did they let that affect their own sense of who they are? I've known people who went from the heights of being physically fit to the depths of being physically impaired. And did that give them some difference in the level of their worth? Unfortunately, often it does. And that's where our own thinking gets in the way of us. Sometimes we struggle to figure out what something's going to mean. Now, there's an old story. It's a Buddhist story about the farmer. And the story about this farmer is that he's sitting there with only one horse. And one day, the horse runs away. Now, the neighbors came and they wanted to make him feel better. And they talked about how terrible his loss was. But the farmer said, "What makes you think it is so terrible?" About a month later, the horse comes back and this time brings with her two beautiful wild horses. And the neighbors become excited at the farmer's great fortune. "Such lovely, strong horses," they told him. And the farmer said, "What makes you think this is good fortune?" The farmer's son was thrown from one of the wild horses and it broke his leg, and all the neighbors were distressed. "Such bad luck," they told him. The farmer said, "What makes you think so bad?" Then war came, and every able-bodied man was conscripted and sent into battle. Only the farmer's son, because he'd broken his leg, got to stay back in the village and survived. All the others were killed. The neighbors congratulated the farmer. "What makes you think this is good?" said the farmer. The idea behind this is no matter what's happening, we don't know what else is coming down the road and what those new realities are getting us ready for. How many people do we see that seem to be coming through a horrible time suddenly make good out of it, suddenly find a way of moving beyond that, of learning from it, of growing from it? And how many times have we seen somebody who seemed to be at the top of their game, who suddenly have found good fortune only to fall and watch it fall and watch it all fall around them? The fact is that things just happen. And when we begin to put our own thinking on it, that's when we get into trouble. Sometimes we have to work to let the events just be the events. Not about what's going to come down the road or why this has happened, but just the events themselves. This really is one of those where if you look into the Buddhist thought, this is the difference between pain and suffering. According to the Buddhist, the pain is an inevitable part of life, but suffering is optional. And the reason it's optional is because suffering is caused from an attachment to the pain. Now, that's a Buddhist belief, but it's also a realistic belief for all of us to recognize that some event is pain enough. When we add our own wonderings about why could this happen to us, and maybe it should have happened to somebody else, and why could this not have passed, and we struggle against the events that have already happened, then we get wrapped into the pain. We find it difficult to get away from the pain. Now, there is no way to escape the pains of life. It's just going to happen. Life is full contact. No matter how much time you spend playing it safe, it's going to end. And so the real question we have is what happens between the beginning and the ending. How we're going to live our life in the midst of that. Are we going to live it by trying to hide from any possibility of hurt? Are we going to stay away from relationships because some relationship hurt us in the past? Are we going to stop working hard because we weren't rewarded when we worked hard in the past? Are we going to hold back parts of ourselves from the world because it just hasn't gotten us where we want to before? Or do we decide that we're going to keep moving ahead, that we're going to keep on living? And now this is not an excuse for recklessness, that we can destroy our lives, no doubt about it. But this is just a reality check that we can either always play it safe and limit our life greatly, or we can decide we're going to live and find ways of getting out there. I remember years ago, I was talking with a radiologist friend of mine, and you know, it was early on in those days when they were putting the scanners into the mall, and I thought it was very interesting. You go to the mall, pay for the scan, whatever that amount was. It varied from place to place, and a radiologist would read it from head to toe and begin to help you see what might be problems. What might be problems was what concerned my radiologist. Now, my radiologist friend, I said, you know, what do you think about these scans? Thinking it would actually be good for his profession. And so he might really appreciate the fact that this was becoming popular. And he said, oh, I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I said, really? I mean, this is the tool of your profession. The best you can do is to get this scan, and that scan might be able to show you some way of that you can stop something that's coming your way, some way of finding more health for yourself. And that might be a way of preventing something. His response was something I hadn't considered. He said, you know, Lee, if we do a scan on somebody, if we do a full body scan, I will find something in you. I will find something that's suspect. I'll find a shadow or a dark place or something that we can't explain in a healthy body. And once I've found that, I'm going to have to check it out. I'm going to have to go take a look at it. And the only way we can look at most of those things is invasive. We have to go in and look at those shadows. We have to go in and look at those irregularities, and that's already dangerous. So that is what I start with my opposition to. And I said, yeah, but what if by doing that, you discover that I have, you know, a pending heart attack, or I have a blood vessel that's about to burst, or I have cancer, or I have something that's structurally wrong that needs to be fixed? And he said, well, here's the deal. Life is terminal. Something is going to get you. No matter how many scans we do, something will catch up with you because life is terminal. And I so clearly remember that moment of going, wow, what a phrase. Life is terminal. You know, we don't have to wait for is cancer terminal or is our heart condition terminal? Life is terminal. When we are born, the clock starts ticking, and every day that passes, we get closer to that point. And we can either pretend that's not the case, we can deny that and play it safe and play it fearfully, or we can say, how do I really want to be in this world? How do I really want to approach this? And then that begins to change our approach when the stuff happens. There are really two last things that are in our control: our actions and our attitude. Our actions are outward, you know, what we do in the world. We can control that, how we treat other people, how we take care of ourselves, how we move through the world. We have that choice, our actions. We can either be very, very scarcity-based, where we're trying to gather everything to ourselves, or we can be very, very abundantly-based, where we're trying to figure out how to give back to the world, how to hand back our blessings to the world. Those are actions. It's also based in attitude, when we have a choice of how we're going to respond to things. Viktor Frankl, who was a survivor of a concentration camp, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning, which is one of my top books. And in that book, he says the one last freedom that every man has, and by that he means every human has, is to choose their attitude in the midst of anything. That he could have, while being in the concentration camp, been completely destroyed by that. He watched people whose attitude was to give up on life, to become angry and bitter, to decide not to live anymore, to basically be in a deadened state even if they didn't die. Many died. Or he could choose the attitude of constantly looking for meaning, of constantly looking for how to be a part of that community, how to reach out, how to give that last piece of bread to the starving person, how to take care of the people who were sick and hurting, how to think about what could come after that, how to control his own attitude in the midst of all the suffering. And in the midst of all the suffering, he was able to choose his own attitude, to choose how he's going to go around the world. Now, there's another story. And this is a story about the king and his friend. It's about an African king who had a close friend, and this friend always had the habit of remarking, "This is good." It didn't matter what happened in life. He always responded that way. Now, one day, the king and this friend were out hunting, and the king's friend loaded a gun and handed it to the king. But he had loaded it wrong, and when the king fired it, his thumb was blown off. "This is good," exclaimed his friend. The horrified and hurt and bleeding king was absolutely furious with him and said, "How can you say this is good? This is obviously horrible." So the king put his friend in jail. About a year later, the king went hunting by himself. Some cannibals captured him and took him to their village, and they tied up his hands and stacked some wood, getting ready to bind him to a stake and cook him. As they came near to set the fire to the wood, they noticed that the king was missing a thumb. Now, being very superstitious, they never ate anyone who was less than whole. So they untied the king and they sent him on his way. Now, the king was full of remorse and he rushed to the prison to release his friend. "You were right," said the king. "It was good." The king told his friend how the missing thumb saved his life and added, "I feel so sad I locked you in jail. That was such a bad thing to do." "No," said his friend. "This is good." "Oh, how could that be good, my friend? I did a terrible thing to you while I owe you my life," said the king. "It is good," said his friend, "because if I wasn't in jail, I would have been hunting with you and they would have killed me." So you see, sometimes how we choose to look at any situation gives us a different outlook. There may be some possibility of the goodness in it in spite of what we can see. In other words, sometimes when the bad happens, hidden in there is the possibility of growth. Hidden in there is somewhere that can challenge us to grow into something bigger than we are. That those obstacles are what really give us the points of growth. On my way this past weekend to pick up my daughter and bring her back from college, I listened to a book on tape. It's one of my favorite ways of spending that time in the car. And the book I listened to was The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. Now, if you haven't heard this, you need to grab the book. It is an excellent way of looking at the world. The Obstacle is the Way. In it, he talks about the fact that sometimes when we get that obstacle in our way, it's not the obstacle. It's our way. We have to find a way of dealing with that obstacle. And as soon as we find our way around the obstacle, we realize that that obstacle gave us new skills, gave us new self-understanding, gave us new ideas, gave us new ways of being in the world. The problem is sometimes we have a tendency of believing that if something is in our way, it means that we're going the wrong way. If something gets in our way, we say, "Well, perhaps this isn't quite the right thing to do. I'll have to go another way. This is the wrong thing." I just wrote an article about relationships, and I challenge the belief in relationships that if there's a problem in the relationship, maybe it's the wrong person to be in a relationship with. If the marriage has issues, it must be with the wrong person, rather than saying, how do we grow through these issues? How do we take the challenges that come our way and actually grow from them? Now, I write this and I talk about this because it's a place of growth for me, that I can always do a better job of looking at the difficulties in my life and saying, how do I need to learn from this? I can be discouraged by it. I can be frustrated by it. Or I can say, what's my opportunity in it? Now, I want to be clear here. This doesn't take away the pain and the difficulties of life. But it makes sure that we don't add a lot of baggage to the pains and the difficulties that come our way. We don't have to add to our struggles. They're already there. We don't have to even invite the struggles into our life. They're already going to come. The question is, what do we do when it comes? Do we pull back? Do we say this must be wrong? Or do we say, is there something I need to learn here? Is there a new place of growth for me? Is there some place that I need to lean into? I need to move towards. I need to move around and beyond, because that obstacle in the way is the way. That when we finally get around it, we realize the opportunities that it gave us. I truly believe that most of the time when we learn anything powerful in our lives, it's because we've dealt with the difficulties. We've lived through it. We've learned from it. So I want you to think about a couple of questions, the same ones that I ask myself. What is your passion? What is it that really gets you excited? Now, this isn't a chase your passion and that money will flow from it, but passion gives you direction. It points you in the right way. Then I ask the question, what is your contribution to the world? What are you uniquely created here to do? What is it that you are built to put back into the world? Because there is a close connection between what your passion is and what your contribution will be. And that's what we begin to pick apart. Then I want you to ask a question. What are the fears that hold you back? What are the fears that keep you stuck? We all have them. We all have places where our fears keep us bound up. But I want you to do the next thing. Notice the fears and then choose to take a step, any step toward your passion or the contribution you want to make. Take a step towards something that pulls you forward and past that fear. Courage, according to Ryan Holiday, is simply taking action. We can do a lot of analysis about what that means, about how courage requires these parts of our personality, or how it calls upon us to be greater than humanly possible. Or we can just say courage is taking action. It's just taking action, doing the next necessary thing to move you towards your passion, to move you towards your contribution, to move you towards what you need to be doing. So in the end, courage simply is taking action in the direction of your life rather than away from it. I'm hoping this has been helpful for you. I'm hoping it gives you a couple of things to think about. And what I'd love to know is how you respond to that. What does this make sense to you? And you can write that in the comments section, or you can email me at podcasts@thriveology.com, podcasts@thriveology.com. That's no S on the end of that, just podcast@thriveology.com. And let me know how this kind of responded for you, what it brought up for you, and what other topics you might want us to cover as we move forward with how you can thrive more in your life. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best for a thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.